Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This article is entitled National Weather Service. July was fifth warmest month in Midland's history, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. July 2023 was the fifth warmest month on record in Midland, according to preliminary figures from the National Weather Service. The average temperature, an average of the daily high and low temperatures, was 87.5 degrees, which was the second warmest month of July on record and fifth overall. The five warmest months include July 2016, 88.2 degrees, June 2011, 88 degrees, August 2019, 87.9 degrees, and August 2011, 87.8 degrees. The typical average temperature for the month of July is 84.4 degrees. July 2023 will be known for the warmest high temperature of 110 degrees on July 12th. 17 days of high temperatures of 100 degrees or warmer. 13 consecutive 100 degree days, the fourth longest streak all time. 4 days of high temperatures of 105 degrees or warmer. An average high temperature of 100.0 degrees during the month. The typical high temperature in July is 96 degrees, 0.33 inch of precipitation, 1.29 inches below the normal for July. The hot conditions continue a warming trend in Midland that has become more pronounced within the last 15 years. The National Weather Service shows that the five warmest months of July have taken place since 2011, and that three of the five warmest months of July have happened since 2020. The National Weather Service also reported that the five warmest months on record have taken place since 2011. July 2023 is the only month since 2020 to make the top five. The National Weather Service is calling for highs at or above 100 degrees through at least Monday, and a 50 to 70% chance of above-average temperatures for the next 6 to 10 days. The Climate Prediction Center is calling for a 50 to 60% chance of above-average temperatures through August. Warmest months on record. July 2016, 88.2 degrees. June 2011, 88 degrees. August 2019, 87.9 degrees, August 2011, 87.8 degrees, and July 2023, 87.5 degrees. Warmest Julys in Midland. 2016, 88.2 degrees, 2023, 87.5, 2020, 87.4, 2022, 87.2, and 2011, 87.0. Other weather notables. Number of 100-degree days in a month, 17. Tied with June 2023 for 10th all time. Number of consecutive 100-degree days, 13. Fourth all time. Number of consecutive 105 degree days, 3, tied for 11th all time. Number of 105 degree days, 4, brings total in 2023 to 14, tied for 2nd all time. This article is entitled 2023 on Pace to be one of the driest in history, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Midland County needs rain. The National Weather Service shows that is the case. The NWS reported 0.33 inch fell in July, and 1.79 inches have fallen through July 31st during the calendar year. That total is 5.82 inches below what is normal through July 31st, 7.61 inches. The Keach-Byram Drought Index, which the Texas A&M Forest Service uses to determine drought conditions, shows Midland County is in its driest category, with a score of 622. The index states that a score of 600 to 800 is often associated with more severe drought and increased wildfire occurrence. Intense, deep-burning fires with extreme intensities can be expected. Live fuels can also be expected to burn actively at these levels. The U.S. Drought Monitor shows Midland County inside a region impacted by moderate to severe drought. The U.S. Monthly Drought Outlook shows Midland County inside a region where drought will persist or drought development is likely. The same can be said of the U.S. Seasonal Drought Outlook. Last week, Midland County leaders put a burn ban in place inside the county. Midland County is one of 159 counties across the state with a burn ban in place, according to Texas A&M Forest Service. So, the dry conditions have been impactful. The National Weather Service shows that of the 10 driest years in Midland's recorded history, only one had a lower total through the month of July than 2023, and that was 2011. 0.16 inch. Of course, there had been 2.23 inches of rain through July 31st in 2022. The National Weather Service reported 9.40 inches fell during that entire year. So, what to expect? The Climate Prediction Center is calling for equal chances for typical rainfall from August through December, which the NWS reports as 5.9 inches. Even a typical last 5 months of the year rain-wise would result in one of the driest months of the year in Midland's history. This article is entitled City Councilman Corrales to Work as Prosecutor for DA's Office by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Midland City Councilman Dan Corrales will work as a prosecutor in the Midland County District Attorney's Office. District Attorney Laura Nodolph confirmed the hire, and that Corrales will begin on August 7th. Corrales will be an assistant district attorney and work in the office's misdemeanor division. Nodolph said she and Corrales talked about the opportunity during a random conversation. Corrales' LinkedIn page shows his experience includes less than a year working in the Kings County District Attorney's Office and work as a judicial intern for the New York State Supreme Court and as a paralegal for the New York County District Attorney's Office. It also shows Corrales as the business owner of the Corrales Law Firm in Midland. Experience reviewing cases and prosecuting is more than the Midland County District Attorney's Office gets from students straight out of law school, Nodolph said. This article is entitled Communities in Schools Permian Basin Commits to At-Risk Students by Ben Schaffer. Communities in Schools Permian Basin surrounds at-risk students with a strong support system, helping them stay in school and continue their educational paths. Communities in Schools personnel said, as it relates to dropout rates, the Permian Basin is unique. On top of the typical at-risk factors like economic disadvantage and family issues, the oil field can be attractive to many young students. A lot of kids drop out to work, Eliseo Elizondo, CISPB executive director said, to help support their families. Elizondo illustrated the scope of the dropout problem in the Permian Basin. Last year, he said communities and schools case managed a record high 2,100 at-risk students. Elizondo shared that in just ECISD and MISD, there are 35,000 students considered at risk of dropping out of school. Of the 4,000 students that attend Odessa High School, 3,000 are considered at risk, according to CISPB. According to statistics shared by CISPB, even if young people leave high school to work in the oil fields, those who don't receive a high school diploma are at a much higher risk of landing in prison, needing government financial assistance, or having children of their own who drop out. We know that this path, working in the oil field, is nice and shiny. You can still go to that path, but please get this high school done first, Morgan said. The organization is committed to providing whatever at-risk students need to remain on the right track in their educational path. Communities and Schools puts at least one staff member in schools around the Permian Basin. Odessa and Permian High Schools have 3 and 2 support staff members on campus, respectively. Midland schools tend to have 1. When I say that we serve a campus, I have at least 1 staff member embedded there full-time, Elizondo said. They get to know those student populations, the teachers. The organization details its programs that it hopes will impact the lives of at-risk students. The XY Zone program is a male mentoring initiative at Midland and Ector County High Schools that provides young men with consistent male role models invested in their success. Project Athena is a female mentoring and empowerment program. CISPB officials said the program focuses on building up young women's self-esteem and sense of self-worth to affect change in their lives. Introduce a Girl to Engineering Day is a one-day program for Permian Basin middle schoolers. The young women are introduced to different disciplines within engineering through activities and design challenges. Impact is a female mentoring program specifically for girls that attend Midland Freshman High School. The students meet with their mentors twice a month to discuss healthy living habits, professional work skills, self-esteem, and more. Pink Pantry provides supplies and education to help keep young women engaged in school. According to CISPB's website, 20% of young women in the United States miss at least 1 day of school per year due to a lack of feminine hygiene supplies. Beyond School Walls is a mentoring program that allows students to learn about business and personal etiquette, resume building, interview skills, and career planning. Recently, Communities and Schools realized that trauma and crisis instigated increases in local dropout rates. In response, Elizondo created a mental health support program to address the community need. The organization provides free mental health services for students during the school day, aftercare through the case management branch of the organization, and fosters a positive atmosphere in the school setting to help eliminate the stigma associated with mental health services, according to the organization. A troubling revelation for Elizondo since implementing the mental health support department is discovering how frequently local elementary school students use it. A couple of years ago, we piloted our first elementary in Ector County ISD, and this fall we're in 9, he said. I didn't realize how much crisis and trauma our little ones are going through. This upcoming school year, Communities and Schools will be in 30 Permian Basin schools. This article is entitled, LaMisa Man, 19, dies in 2-vehicle accident on State Highway 349 in Martin County, by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. A 19-year-old LaMisa Man died Monday after a 2-vehicle accident on State Highway 349 in Martin County, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that two Chevrolet Silverados were traveling southbound on State Highway 349 near mile marker 314. The driver of a 2019 Silverado was reducing his speed due to a prior traffic collision ahead when the 2019 Silverado was struck from the rear by a 2015 Silverado. The passenger of the 2015 Silverado, Broylan James Chavez, was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he succumbed to his injuries sustained in the crash. The occupants of the 2019 Silverado and the driver of the 2015 Silverado were also transported to MMH, where they were reported to be in stable condition, according to DPS. The accident occurred at 6:24 a.m., 13 miles north of Midland County. DPS reported that Chavez was not wearing a seatbelt. This is the Life Tributes column, formerly known as Obituary. Ernest Ray Klatt, December 23, 1934 to July 30, 2023. Ernest Ray Klatt of Midland passed away on Sunday, July 30th. The family will receive guests from 7 to 9 p.m. Wednesday, August 2nd at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held 1:30 p.m. Thursday, August 3rd at Jesus Name United Pentecostal Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Ernest Ray Klatt was born on December 23, 1934, to William Ernest and Dorset Josephine Klatt in Midland. Ernest Ray Klatt is survived by his wife Ann Klatt of Midland, son Ray Klatt and wife Darla of Midland, daughter Teresa Murphy and husband Ronnie of Midland, four grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. Ernest Ray Klatt was preceded in death by his parents, brother Eddie Wayne Klatt, sister Barbara Ann Black, son Tracy Lane Klatt, and granddaughter Kristen Lee Klatt. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ava Valadez, October 21, 1949, to July 30, 2023. Ava Valadez, 73, died Sunday, July 30th in Midland. Ava was born October 21, 1949 in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. She is survived by brothers Lupe Valadez, Miriam, and Francisco Valadez, Jr. She is preceded in death by brothers Oscar Valadez, Juan Valadez, and Adam Valadez, sister Irma Garcia, and parents Enriqueta and Francisco Valadez Sr. Private services will be held at a later date. Services entrusted to Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home in Midland. Stephen Lee Chandler. Stephen Lee Chandler passed away Sunday, July 30th. Services will be held 11 a.m. Saturday, August 5th, at Christ Church, Midland, and under the direction of Andrews Corgill Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, please honor his memory by contributing to Safe Place of the Permian Basin, or with your gift to a charity of your choice. Suzanne Chase. Suzanne Chase, 85, of Midland, passed away July 30th. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m., Friday, August 4th, at St. Nicholas Episcopal Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. This article is entitled Midland Stuck in Another 100-Degree Stretch by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. 100 degrees and no rain. That is the National Weather Service forecast for at least the next week. The NWS reported that 100-degree high temperatures are expected through at least August 8th, and that low temperatures will fall into the mid-70s. The 100-degree high temperature Wednesday in Midland will be cooler than what is expected in Abilene, San Angelo, Austin, and Dallas, 106 degrees. A high of 107 degrees is expected in Fort Worth. The place to be Wednesday appears to be Ruidoso, New Mexico, where a high temperature of 82 degrees and thunderstorms are expected. Tuesday's report. Tuesday's high, 100 degrees. Typical high for August 1st, 96 degrees. Monday's low, 77 degrees. Typical low for August 1st, 73 degrees. Record high for August 1st, 105 in 1944. Last 3 days. Sunday, 97 degrees. Monday, 100 degrees. Tuesday, 100 degrees. Next 3 days. Wednesday, 100 degrees. Thursday, 100 degrees. Friday, 102 degrees. This article is entitled, Midland ISD Offers Incentive Programs for Employees, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Midland ISD announced Tuesday that it will offer retention and attendance incentives for its employees. The retention incentive provides an additional $1,000 to $1,500 annually for all eligible MISD employees. The retention incentive acknowledges the importance of our employees' long-term commitment to MISD, the district stated in a news release. The perfect attendance incentive offers a potential payout ranging from $1,500 to $3,000 each year for exempt and non-exempt campus staff. The payments will be accrued incrementally every 6 weeks throughout the year, according to MISD. Midland ISD recognizes the need to retain and reward our valuable staff in order to accomplish our mission of preparing all students for college or career, the district offered in a news release. We firmly believe that high retention rates among our educators and campus-based staff are essential for fostering stable and thriving learning spaces. Chief of Human Capital Brandon Reyes said, "We are committed to fostering a nurturing environment where our students can thrive academically and emotionally. Our team of educators and staff play a vital role in achieving this goal, and we are excited to introduce these incentives as a testament to their dedication." This article is entitled, MISD Voters Could Pass One of the Largest Bonds in Texas History, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. If Midland voters pass both propositions that are expected to be placed on a November ballot, the Midland ISD bond referendum will mark the fifth largest amount ever approved for a school district in Texas history. That comes from information provided by Midland ISD and Hilltop Securities. The Midland ISD Bond Planning Committee has recommended to the school board that a two-proposition bond referendum be put on the November 7th ballot. The Midland ISD Board will meet later this month to discuss the presentation and decide what goes on the ballot. Proposition A calls for two new high schools, $1.077 billion. Middle school additions and renovations, $225.3 million, and safety, security, and accessibility measures, $58.7 million. The total amount, not including interest, would be $1.361 billion. Proposition B calls for renovations and deferred maintenance of aging facilities, $260.2 million, and a new elementary in Northeast Midland, $57 million. The total amount, not including interest, would be $317 million. The combined amount of both propositions currently stands at $1.678 billion. That total, if approved by voters in its entirety, would surpass all but four bonds in the state's history. They are Dallas ISD, $3.541 billion in 2020, Austin ISD, $2.439 billion in 2022, Northwest ISD, $1.995 billion in 2023, Cypress-Fairbanks ISD, $1.762 billion in 2019. The information shows a majority of the districts in the top 15 of bonds were either larger metropolitan districts, Dallas, Austin, Houston, San Antonio ISD, or districts having to deal with a tremendous suburban growth, Plano, Prosper, and Forney. If an election is called by the school board as expected, Midland voters would face an unprecedented opportunity to invest in the school district. The largest bond passed in Midland ISD history is $163 million in 2012. Voters in Midland have passed two other bond referendums over $100 million, the $115 million hospital election in 2009 and the $100 million road bond in 2017. The Midland ISD Bond Planning Committee, in its presentation, reported that the district's interest and sinking tax rate would increase to 28.46 cents per $100 valuation, which would place it ahead of many older school districts in West Texas, but behind many peer districts across the state, like Denton, Northwest, McKinney, Grand Prairie, and Abilene. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, OPEC Output Plunges by Most Since 2020 as Saudis Deepen Cuts, by Grant Smith and Julian Lee, Bloomberg News. OPEC's crude production tumbled by the most in 3 years as Saudi Arabia implemented a deeper cutback in a bid to shore up global markets. Output from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries plunged by 900,000 barrels a day last month to an average of 27.79 million a day, according to a Bloomberg survey. It's the biggest reduction since the group and its allies slashed supplies during the depths of the COVID pandemic in 2020. Riyadh delivered on the vast majority of the extra 1 million barrel a day cut it promised, in a bid to buoy prices against lackluster economic data in China and concerns about recession in the U.S. Oil prices have recovered as world supplies tighten, reaching a three-month high above $85 a barrel in London recently. Traders expect the kingdom will announce an extension of the measure into September in the coming days, deepening signs of a supply shortfall in the market. While consuming nations fret that OPEC policy risks reviving inflation, key group members appear to need higher oil prices to cover government spending. Saudi Arabia pumped an average of 9.15 million barrels a day in July, according to the survey. Supplies also fell in Nigeria by 130,000 barrels a day to 1.26 million daily, as a leak at the Forcados terminal thwarted the country's plans to bolster production. Libya suffered a setback, with production slipping by 50,000 barrels a day to 1.1 million a day following a protest that briefly halted its Sharara oil field. The Saudis are also, belatedly, receiving some help in their effort to support the market from Russia, a member of the wider alliance known as OPEC Plus. Moscow had for many months flouted pledges to reduce supplies as it focused on maximizing revenues to fund its war against Ukraine. But tanker tracking data shows it's now paring exports. Shipments have slumped to a seven-month low at just under 3 million barrels a day. Saudi Arabia and Russia will chair an online review of market conditions by key OPEC Plus nations on August 4th. The full 23-nation OPEC Plus alliance is due to meet in late November. Bloomberg's survey is based on ship tracking data, information from officials, and estimates from consultants, including Kepler Limited, Rapidan Energy Group, and Rystad Energy. This article is entitled Occidental ADNOC to Team Up on Carbon Capture Investments by David Weth and Anthony DiPaola, Bloomberg News. Occidental Petroleum Corporation has agreed to partner with a top oil producer in the United Arab Emirates to explore investment in the U.S. and overseas for giant plants that suck carbon dioxide out of the sky. The Memorandum of Understanding with Abu Dhabi National Oil Company includes an agreement to consider the possibility for a direct air capture plant in the UAE that could absorb as much as 1 million tons of carbon dioxide annually, Occidental said Tuesday in a statement. We want to build the first few of these to make sure that we prove up the technology in a way that would make us get the best possible scenario with project financing, Chief Executive Officer Vicky Haloub said in a phone interview. This collaboration is absolutely necessary to be able to get these kind of projects done at scale, and as many as we can. The Memorandum of Understanding brings Occidental one step closer to having a partner with the financial firepower to help shoulder the costs and keep its plan for 100 plants by 2035 moving forward. But it's still too soon to go after project financing, she said. Occidental began construction earlier this year in the Permian Basin of West Texas on a 500,000-ton plant, making it, for the time being, the biggest of its kind when it opens in 2 years. A successful build-out is crucial, not just for Occidental's energy transition strategy, but also to demonstrate pulling carbon dioxide directly from the atmosphere is a viable business model. On Monday, ADNOC announced plans to accelerate its net zero emissions target as it prepares to host the COP28 Climate Summit later this year. ADNOC officials also met with ExxonMobil Corporation to discuss low-carbon technologies and the outlook for the global energy industry. In the meeting, Exxon CEO Darren Woods agreed with Abu Dhabi's Crown Prince and the ADNOC CEO to look for opportunities to work together on decarbonization and technology exchanges, according to the Emirates Media Office. This article is entitled Pioneer Reports $1.1 Billion Earnings from the Associated Press. Irving, Pioneer Natural Resources Company, on Tuesday reported second quarter net income of $1.1 billion. The Irving-based company said it had profit of $4.55 per share. Earnings, adjusted for non-recurring gains, were $4.49 per share. The results surpassed Wall Street expectations. The average estimate of 11 analysts surveyed by Zacks Investment Research was for earnings of $4.12 per share. The independent oil and gas company posted revenue of $4.6 billion in the period, falling short of street forecasts. Seven analysts surveyed by Zacks expected $4.68 billion. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 2nd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, More Than Coffee Served from the Kiaro Trolley by Morgan Taylor Thomas. I've never given much thought to the purpose of coffee. I mean, I didn't actually start drinking the caffeinated beverage until college, and even then I didn't fall in love. I'm more of an herbal tea kind of gal. Yet, for Hannah and Jeremiah Foley, coffee represents a lifetime of firsts. First jobs, first date, first family business. Growing up working in coffee shops instilled the passion early for the husband-wife duo. After that initial introduction, Hannah and Jeremiah started learning the ins and outs of coffee making. How different coffee beans blend or don't blend well with others. What add-ins enrich flavor profiles. How to create unique brews and more. So, starting a coffee business only felt natural to the West Texas natives. However, to match their one-of-a-kind coffee style, they knew they needed a one-of-a-kind shop. We really wanted something that was mobile, but still be gorgeous. So that sent us down the trolley track. We'd been looking for a trolley for about 3.5 to 4 years, Hannah explained. We were going to do it in 2020, and then the world broke. Last summer, we found a trolley over in Albuquerque, New Mexico, for a great deal and in amazing shape. At that point, we spent about 8 months renovating. In March, Hannah and Jeremiah opened Chiaro Coffee Company to the public, showcasing their year's worth of dedication and skills. Located at 4041 Maple Avenue in Odessa, the team wanted to maintain a walkable-ish atmosphere for the surrounding neighborhoods and community, reminiscent and in line with some of their favorite memories as a young family. When we lived in Lubbock, we lived in Tech Terrace, real close to the university. Every Saturday morning, we would put the toddler in the stroller, walk down to J&B Coffee, get coffee and pastries, and go to the park, Hannah stated. Growing up in West Texas, the walkability was not like it is in bigger cities. That was something we wanted to bring to our neighborhood. Most mobile food and beverage business models are built primarily around events, but that's secondary for us. With the help of their 4 kids, number 5 is on the way, Hannah and Jeremiah turned their lifelong dream into a family function, achieving the goal Hannah said she always wanted, to be a family that not only plays together, but works together as well. A lesson in responsibility and ownership, Hannah said Chiaro continuously helps their family grow both individually and collectively, strengthening their unit and forging a world of happiness. Chiaro Coffee Company is open 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday through Friday and 8 a.m. to noon Saturday, 4041 Maple Avenue, Odessa. Hot Bites. Like most coffee shops, Chiaro Coffee Company offers a few pastries and kolaches for guests to enjoy with their drinks. Current season pastries include a lemon blueberry scone, $3.50, coffee cake, $3.75, and a changing pastry of the day, market price. As for savory bites, a double sausage and cheese kolache, $5.50, and double sausage jalapeno and cheese, $5.50 kolache, fit the bill. Cold sips. The pride and joy of Chiaro obviously falls to their hot and cold coffees, teas, and more. With Jeremiah's extensive knowledge on the property chemistry of coffee and add-ins, Hannah said the company makes all of their syrups, sauces, and special brews from scratch. Our roaster roasts the coffee beans and ships them to us the next day, Hannah explained. The peak time to actually drink or brew coffee is 10 to 21 days off roast. That's when you're going to have the absolute best flavor. With this science in mind, Chiaro plans each drink out accordingly. Basic coffee options include drip brew, cold brew, latte, cappuccino, mocha, white chocolate mocha, caramel macchiato, flat white, and an espresso and tonic. As for Chiaro's signature and seasonal espresso drinks, which include monthly changes, guests can enjoy a strawberries and cream, strawberry syrup, espresso, milk over ice with strawberry sweet cream. Berry Patch Mocha, strawberry or blackberry syrup, mocha, milk, espresso. The Aladdin, blackberry or orange zest syrup, espresso, tonic over ice, and more. For August, guests can expect a hatched green chili surprise. Non-coffee drinks include a masala chai tea, black tea, London Fog Latte, Earl Grey, Desert Fog Latte, red tea, matcha green tea latte, lavender London Fog Latte, hot chocolate, vanilla steamer, chocolate milk, Italian sodas, and Italian cream sodas. The trolley carries 12 syrup flavors and 5 milk options, whole, 1%, breve, oat, almond. Overall vibes. A third-wave coffee experience, Chiaro Coffee Company is unlike any in the Midland-Odessa area. Beyond the unique drinks and treats, Hannah and Jeremiah care about the history of their coffee and the impact it may have on customers. The trolley is not just another coffee shop, but a lifetime of effort and dedication displayed on four wheels. By paving new ways for the community to gather, Hannah and Jeremiah forge an exclusive experience for each patron. The brisk smell of brewed beans filling the trolley brings nostalgia and peace to any person who steps inside, making Chiaro Coffee Company one of the area's most creative and advantageous establishments yet.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, July 29th. UTPB shares in $1 million grant to Advance Energy. The story was written by Mellon McEwen. Decades of experience and expertise in energy production have made the Permian Basin not only a global source of energy, but the source of know-how and technology to produce energy. Aiming to further develop that expertise and technology and help adapt it to a future of low-carbon or net-zero carbon energy, the National Science Foundation has awarded the University of Texas Permian Basin a $1 million planning grant to support research into and implementation of technologies in the region. UTPB is part of a two-state, Texas and New Mexico, multi-institutional team receiving the grant. The award will accelerate the Permian Energy Development Laboratory's progress, with particular attention to bridging the gaps between research, entrepreneurship, and job creation in the region. More importantly, it is the first step toward a possible 10-year, $160 million investment from the National Science Foundation. Of that potential investment, George Nana, director of UTPB's Texas Water and Energy Institute and professor of mechanical engineering, said requests for proposals are expected in April through June of next year, with awards presented in the fall of 2025. Quote, "The research needs to be Permian Basin-focused, clearly identify stakeholders in the region, and should benefit people in the region, not just the researcher or to do research for itself," he told the Reporter-Telegram by email. The proposed leadership team, representative of the people in the region, should have experience in the translation of technology to practice and in economic development. End quote. The research should clearly convey the region's competitive advantage, including landscape analysis of strengths and gaps in the region, and how those gaps will be addressed and strengths leveraged, he continued. Nana listed four core focus areas of any research funded by the $160 million investment: carbon and materials management, including carbon capture, carbon accounting, methane management, and the circular economy. Advanced energy, fuels, and integration, including renewable power, subsurface energy, low-carbon fuels, industrial energy infrastructure, energy resilience, and energy industry policies. Water, land, and agriculture, including water resources, produced water management, environmental monitoring, geographic information systems, and regenerative agriculture and conservation. Economic development and environmental justice, including equitable energy economics, community resilience, entrepreneurship, and regional education. Of the $1 million grant, Nana said it is the National Science Foundation's Engines Development Award and will help advance energy and resilience technologies in the Permian Basin. The region's considerable energy infrastructure and expertise, developed through decades of producing energy on a globally significant scale, will be leveraged to support research, development, and commercialization of advanced energy solutions and technologies. Quote, more specifically, the Regional Innovation Engines Development Award will support collaboration among community members and energy experts from the public and private sectors to develop a regional engine for advancing energy innovation. This framework will ultimately inform other oil and gas-dependent regions. Together, they will work to ensure that the future of energy in America is safe, reliable, affordable, clean, and fair, he wrote. Even more specifically, the award will develop and demonstrate advanced energy technologies at scale, improve systemic environmental performance, share the benefits of the energy economy through workforce development and education, accelerate growth of the region's innovation ecosystem. UTPB's Water and Energy Institute already has a robust produced water research program, and Nana said his department is planning research programs around four core focus areas: mineral extraction using a photothermal porous membrane, solar-enabled produced water treatment, design of microheat exchangers, technology evaluation of recycling end-of-life photovoltaic panels. The Permian Energy Development Lab is a new initiative that was introduced earlier this year. The initiative serves as a partnership between seven Texas and New Mexico colleges and universities and three national laboratories. In addition to UTPB, partners include Midland College, Odessa College, the Cynthia and George Mitchell Foundation, GTI Energy, NREL Energy, New Mexico State University, New Mexico Tech, Sandia National Laboratories, Texas A&M University, the University of Texas at Austin, and the University of Texas El Paso. Permian returns to center stage in second quarter M&A activity. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Upstream merger and acquisition activity took off in the second quarter as the Permian Basin returned to center stage. Enverus Intelligence Research, a subsidiary of the energy-focused software-as-a-service platform Enverus, said in its summary that second quarter activity boomed with $24 billion in 20 transactions. One notable exception to the Permian-focused quarter was Chevron's purchase of PDC Energy for $7.6 billion. PDC is primarily Denver-Julesburg-focused, but with a footprint in the Delaware Basin. That one deal helped drive a $1.2 billion average size for deals with a disclosed value in the second quarter, more than double the average first quarter deal. Analysts at Enverus credit the Permian's vast inventory of drilling locations being sought by producers with driving the region's popularity in the marketplace. Quote, the second quarter saw a thunderous return to Permian M&A after a relatively quiet start to the year, said Andrew Dittmar, director at Enverus, in the report. Continuing the quote, the need for public buyers to secure quality drilling inventory has been brewing, and the pressure to make a deal has been mounting as the remaining opportunities are narrowed with each successive transaction. That, in turn, is driving higher valuations on the remaining assets, end quote. There were six deals that topped $1 billion during the second quarter, and five of them involved at least some assets in the Permian, including PDC. Four of the six were buyouts of E&Ps funded by private equity that operated entirely in the Permian by public companies. EnCap was the largest seller, unloading four portfolio companies for a combined $5.8 billion. Those were Black Swan Oil and Gas, Petro Legacy Energy, and Piedra Resources to Ovintiv. NGP was the second most active firm, selling Permian assets with two sales for a combined $4.7 billion, Taprock Resources and Hibernia Energy III to Civitas Resources, giving Civitas entry into the Permian. In aggregate, year-to-date in 2023, PE firms have sold $14 billion in assets and $61 billion since the start of the 2021, primarily in the Permian. That marks a material shift in the ownership of upstream assets toward public companies, as PE is not buying in at nearly the pace it is selling. Quote, the formation of new private equity-backed E&Ps hit its peak in 2017, and now, 6 years later, those investments are being unwound via sales to public companies, wrote Dittmar in the analysis. Continuing the quote, for those that invested in the Permian Basin, the returns are likely substantial. The value of undeveloped inventory has climbed sharply over the last 12 months, and public companies are more likely to pay for assets toward the margins of the basin versus focusing strictly on the core. Each sale seems to bring a higher valuation than the one before. With just about 20 private companies left in the Permian that have more than 100 net locations, and many of those unlikely to sell, we anticipate this trend will continue, end quote. While the PE firms are beginning to cash out and haven't abandoned the upstream space wholesale, new capital is being raised and deployed at a much reduced pace. So far in 2023, PE firms have made around 10 commitments to upstream teams versus more than 100 per year at the pinnacle of activity, according to Enverus data. Dittmar said nearly all new commitments are going to establish teams with track records of success. He added that the new groups are increasingly looking outside the Permian due to high competition for Permian deals. The Eagle Ford and Williston Basin seem to be popular destinations for those priced out of the Permian, he observed. For the remainder of 2023, the analysis found there are a handful of private Permian assets still available, and a number of these are likely to find buyers before the year is out. However, as private opportunities further dwindle, more companies are likely to consider corporate mergers with other public companies, and that is likely to provide the next M&A fireworks. Potential combinations include both mergers of equals between the smaller companies or sales to a larger peer. The majors seem poised to participate in potential deal-making, which opens the possibility for even the largest independents to become a target. For smaller companies with a lack of inventory and few options to increase it, finding a corporate merger partner may be the best route forward.
This is the Dear Abby column. Man repeatedly disregards wife's specific complaint. Dear Abby, I'm an older woman. My husband and I have been married 8 years, but were together 15 years prior to our marriage. He is a wonderful, caring man in most ways. But from time to time, he snaps extremely unflattering photos of me, sends them to everyone we know, and even orders enlargements made for me. I have a mouth condition that makes smiling painful, so unless I know a picture is being taken, I look really old and grumpy. I have asked him, please, not to do this, because it's humiliating when he sends them out to friends and family members. I think it's unkind and disrespectful, and have told him so. Yet he persists. I'm to the point that this has become a deal-breaker in our marriage, and he knows it. He claims he loves me and is proud of me. And yes, we have been to counseling about our relationship in general because of the many times he has humiliated me in public. But he won't stop. How can I handle this going forward? Signed, Humiliated and Hurting. Dear Humiliated, it appears your wonderful, caring husband has a mean streak. He's getting his kicks by embarrassing you. One way to handle it going forward would be to ignore him when he does it. It won't be easy, but when he realizes he can't get the desired reaction from you, he may do it less often. Another way to deal with it would be to discuss privately with a licensed therapist whether his behavior really has become a deal-breaker. The choice is yours. Dear Abby, my boyfriend lives with one of his closest friends, Bill. I know him well and stay at their apartment often. Over time, we have grown pretty close. I listen to Bill talk about his hobbies and problems because his friends get tired of his rambling. I'm afraid Bill has become too attached to me because of this, because he has started texting me every day, asks me to go places with him, and fixates on me whenever I am over there. The last straw was when he called me in the middle of the night, crying about his ex-girlfriend. In order to preserve his living situation and their friendship, my boyfriend doesn't want to confront Bill until he crosses a line. I believe he has already violated my boundaries. How do I stop this elephant in the room from growing? Signed, Unsure in the South. Dear Unsure, I agree that more than one boundary has been violated. Because your boyfriend is unwilling to draw the line, you will have to. Start by telling Bill that you don't want him calling in the middle of the night, or as often as he does. Visit your boyfriend at his shared apartment less often. Take your time responding to Bill's daily texts and refuse his invitations to go anywhere. It may take a while for him to get the message, so be prepared. Dear Abby, what do I do if my wife of 36 years wants to be laid to rest somewhere other than next to me in Hawaii? Signed, Wondering in Hawaii. Dear Wondering, hope that you outlive her. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.